live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we have a lot to share. We're going to talk about what happens with that body fat on your arteries. The next time you have a sugar-sweetened beverage, you should know you're at risk of something. There's some good news about what they're finding in grapes. Really good news. And also, the Western dietary pattern as a lethal vector. You mean like the bubonic plague? You mean like the influenza virus that killed tens of millions? Yeah. They're now looking at the Western diet as being considered a, quote, disease vector on par with influenza and other infectious diseases. Wow, you'd think someone would want to change that. Well, those who want to change it have already changed it. Those in power can't. My guest in the second part of our program will be Dr. Jay Cohen, talking about a short conversation on rethinking prostate cancer diagnosis and treatment and PSA exams. Also an issue today from the Huffington Post, Obama student loan policies reaping $51 billion in profits. Well, why should the government be making any profits? Or government-banked banks making any profit off student loans? We'll talk about that. I'll be dealing with the environment today. The secret negotiations, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, it is nothing more than a corporate takeover, the latest from Dave Johnson, Global Research. And I'm going to answer an email that was sent to me. I'm on the road now. This is from Michael, and he writes me a letter. And the letter's about the interview that I had with Professor Emeritus of Environmental Sciences, Guy McPherson. Guy's interview, as I said, will be very disturbing. Well, it was. And I want to share Michael's comments, and then I'll do a commentary in response. Let's begin. We have a lot to cover. Oh, and by the way, also, they're arresting younger and younger kids in school, and one simply fell asleep in a special ed program, and first she was bashed by the teacher with a book, and then the police came and slammed her to the floor, causing her a seizure, handcuffing her and arresting her for falling asleep in school. But no one on the left, corporate left, the good Democrats, don't seem to see that there's a problem with this. Unless, of course, it's your kid. Oh, then there's a problem. The hypocrisy is palpable. I'll deal with that with my own commentary of what's happening to our society. You already know the answer. Fascism. A police state. And we're all allowing it to happen. Let's go to health and nutrition from Science Daily. This is from the Medical Research Council and Clinical Sciences Center, Imperial College London. It says, having too much body fat makes arteries become stiff after middle age. They're talking middle age being 40. In young people, your blood vessels appear to be able to compensate for the effects of being overweight. But after middle age, this adaptability is lost and arteries become progressively stiffer as body fat rises. And that ends when you die from cardiovascular disease. Just visualize this. Visualize a water hose that's brand new. It's soft. Now let it sit out in the sun for a year and it's stiff. That's your arteries. Obesity is a known risk factor for heart disease. And for all the reasons that we discuss on this program, high saturated fats, trans fats, increase in C-reactive protein, homocysteine, triglycerides. Those are all bad. So what you want to do, get rid of the fat. But also what you want to do is protect your arteries. What can help protect your arteries? Well, there are several things. trimethylglycine, vitamin B6, folic acid, B12, vitamin E and tocotrienols, vitamin C is probably the best thing, with quercetin, all that enhances and rhodiola your arteries and epithelial. Now is a time of year when we're seeing a lot of people start to increase the amount of soft drinks. This is from Brigham and Women's Hospital, published in the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. It says the following, quote, 20% of American males and 10% of American females will experience a kidney stone at some point in their lifetime. Often these patients will be advised to drink more fluids as a way to prevent future stone formation. Now, new research from Brigham and Women's Hospital finds that some beverages may be more helpful than others when it comes to preventing recurring kidney stones. Quote, our study found that the relationship between fluid intake and kidney stones may be dependent upon the type of beverage consumed. We found that higher consumption of sugar-sweetened drinks was associated with a higher incidence of kidney stones. Well, soft drinks. Okay. And then they also found that some beverages, such as coffee, green tea and orange juice actually reduced the incidence of kidney stones. And that was done at Catholic University in Rome. Have you had your carrots? Eating the carrots, that's good. Having a little bit of carrot juice mixed with your regular juice, that's good too. This is from the Newcastle University School of Agriculture, Food and Rural Development. Here's what they say. Our research allows us to make a more qualitative assessment of the vegetables we are eating rather than quantitative. We now need to take it a step further by finding out how much of the thalcarinol is needed to prevent the development of cancer and if certain types of carrots are better than others. But what they found in their initial research was this, that there is a chemical called thalcarinol, F-A-L-C-A-R-I-N-O-L. That is the very positive, very powerful protection inside carrots. And actually, it's there to protect the carrot from fungal disease. It's a natural defense mechanism for the vegetable. But when you eat carrots, that same defense mechanism for the carrot becomes a natural defense mechanism against cancer for humans. Additionally, research by Dr. Brandt and her colleagues found that whole carrots contain more benefits than sliced carrots. Quote, boiling whole carrots increase the thalcanol concentrations by 25%. That's a huge increase. So evidently in the heating process, you're liberating and converting nutrients into a bioavailable form. So the thalcarinol is what protects us from cancer. So have your, I would say, steam carrots, and then you can saute them or do whatever you want to enhance their flavor. So one more reason to have our carrots. Now I believe that the grape is one of nature's most perfect foods. We have seen the research repeatedly on this. And my suggestion would be this, that we understand that you can have grapes organic because of the pesticide spray. You don't want that. You can have it as a concentrated juice, a red wine of low alcohol content, or as a powder. The most powerful would be the powder. But all of it's good for you. This is the latest from Applied Physiology and Nutrition and Metabolism, a major peer-reviewed journal. And this was done in Tunisia at the Laboratory of Bioactive Substance at the Center of Biotechnology. Quote, compounds in grapes found to reverse kidney disease. Now, a high-fat diet can lead to non-alcoholic kidney disease and also a non-alcoholic fatty liver. Lipids can increase oxidative stress, so the fatter you are, the more oxidative stress you have. The fatter you are, the more depletion of copper you have, and having potentially lasting and debilitating effects. So reducing fat intake and eating more balanced diet, of course, that is optimal. But now they found that by eating grapes, that could play an important role in reversing kidney damage that's already done. Here's what the end of the study abstract says. Quote, grape seed and skin extract exerted potential protection against fat-induced kidney lipotoxicity and should find potential application in other kidney-related diseases. End quote. So that's very important. You could have kidney disease, and grapes could make a big difference. Now, this is something that I had never seen before, and so this is the beginning of what should be a major interest to a lot of people. This is about the Western diet, and this was assembled from Green Med Info, Sarah G. It says the following, quote, emerging research indicates that the Western diet could rightly be considered a disease vector on par with influenza and other infectious diseases, end quote. Now, when we look at vectors like hepatitis A or influenza, and we think, wow, these are serious, what's causing them, what can we do about them, we never think of the diet as a vector, but indeed it is. Quote, the CDC would be far more effective in their mission of collaborating to create the expertise, information, and tools that people and communities need to protect their health if they paid equal attention tracking dietary vectors of disease creation, such as per capita high fructose corn syrup or Happy Meal consumption or environmental chemical exposure, instead of myopically fixating on the outdated, though hugely profitable, germ-centered model of disease causation. Now, here's what was done. They looked at one of 126 problematic actions we have indexed as the Western diet. So the Western diet can cause 20 distinct disease states or adverse health effects, including lethal cancers, and hence they would qualify as a vector. They affect tens of millions of people. Breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, inflammation, lipid peroxidation, osteoporosis, bone fractures, cardiac hypertrophy, E. coli infections, insulin resistance, intestinal permeability, liver disease, neurodegenerative diseases, oxidative stress, sepsis, type 2 diabetes, so, and of course, obesity. So those conditions are killing more people than any vector in history. Good news about the maitake mushroom, maitake, M-A-I-T-A-K-E. It can inhibit tumor growth and boost immunity. Here's the latest on this. I'll quote this from Michael Ravensthorpe. The maitake, also known in English-speaking countries as the hen of the weed of woods, is a large, earthy brown mushroom that grows at the base of trees, especially oaks. It's native to northern Japan and eastern parts of North America and is one of Japan's major culinary mushrooms. It is equally popular in China, where it's been used in traditional medicine for centuries. What does it do? Well, it has cancer-fighting properties. In fact, ongoing research with human cancer patients have shown that a specific portion of the maitake mushroom called the MD fraction can inhibit tumor growth. Maitake also enhances the activity of cells, thereby increasing the production of interleukins, which are immune cells that are known to prevent cancer growth and can improve the effects of chemotherapy. In fact, maitake is a strong immune booster. It contains polysaccharide fibers called beta-glucans that stimulate the production of neutrophils and T cells and macrophages, which are white blood cells. These cells help our immune system to combat illnesses and remove cellular debris and hasten our recovery from tissue damage. They help lower blood sugar levels, according to a study at Kobe Pharmaceutical University in Japan. Mice that regularly consume maitake experienced a greater decrease in blood sugar levels than the control group. And that's because the polysaccharide found in maitake, called the X fraction, it has the ability to decrease insulin resistance, thus increasing insulin sensitivity. Now, if you take in low glycemic foods and you take the maitake mushroom, then there's no reason that you can't revert back to a pre-diabetic condition. For a lot of people, it could help reduce your blood pressure. A study at Georgetown University Medical Center, Washington, D.C., showed that hypertension in the laboratory model was controlled by maitake mushroom. It can help you lose weight. One 100-gram serving of raw maitake contains only 37 calories, no fat, but it also is very good for you as far as weight loss. It lowers cholesterol, and it is rich in trace minerals. So that's our food of the day, maitake mushrooms. And finally, a study shows that royal jelly fights cancer, improves blood health, and more. This is the latest. Keep in mind, I'm a beekeeper. I have had beehives. I have beehives now for decades. And it's wonderful to see how bees work. Well, royal jelly is a substance that is secreted from the glands of worker bees to feed their larvae and queens. Now, for those of you who bought it, it doesn't have the best taste, so you can sometimes blend it with manuka honey and then put like a teaspoon into a nice lukewarm beverage. But imagine this. Once it's fed to the queen bee, that queen bee will only eat royal jelly her entire life. She lives 4,000% longer than drones or worker bees, and that's because royal jelly. It has cancer-fighting properties. That's according to the British Medical Journal's Complementary and Alternative Medicine. It suppresses the blood supply to tumors, and it also improves blood health. There was a study in Biological and Pharmaceutical Bulletin that showed that royal jelly can improve insulin resistance and blood pressure. And it's rich in nutrients, but it also has antibacterial components. According to the Journal of Biological Chemistry, a protein found in royal jelly provides numerous antibacterial and antimicrobial properties, which means that, let's say you had a sore throat, you take a teaspoon of royal jelly, and you mix that teaspoon with, let's say, a teaspoon of manuka honey, a cup of, I would spray in some colloidal silver, spray in some of wild oregano oil, and then sip the honey, letting the throat get bathed in that. That's the latest on health and nutrition. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a brief break and then come back, and then we're going to look at issues. We have a short newsmaker guest to go to. We have a lot happening. Please stay with us.
I remember my first love affair. Somehow or another, the whole darn thing went wrong. But my mama had some great advice, so I thought I'd put it in the words of this song. I can still hear her saying, "Boy,
boy, boy,
oh, I see you sitting out there all alone, crying your eyes out, cause the woman that you love is gone. Oh, there's gonna be a whole lot of trouble in your life.
A whole lot of trouble.
Oh, so listen to me, get up off your knees, cause only the strong survive." That's what she said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. You gotta be strong. You better hold on. Don't go around with your head hung down. Well, I wouldn't let the little girl know, wouldn't let her know that you made me feel. Then she said, oh, little strolls about.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Hope you're having a nice day. We have people listening from all over the world, and starting next week, we're going to be taking your Skypes every day and playing different videos every day. You can listen by going to PRN.FM. That stands for Progressive Radio Network, the number one internet network in the world, or TuneIn.com, or iTunes.com, or Stitcher, STITCHER.com. Or you can, as tens of thousands have done, you can call up and listen over the telephone, 619-550-0869, 619-550-0869. Just a quick program announcement coming at you on the Progressive Commentary Hour on Monday evening at 7 p.m. This concept, the sociopaths of our oligarchical elite society, a look in-depth at a normal relationship between money, power, and influence. Professor Joel Becken, professor of constitutional and economic law, and he has authored The Corporation. Remember the Academy Award winner? The Pathological Pursuit of Profit and Power? He'll be on. Also, Dr. Christopher Baer, best known as the Wall Street psychologist who has specialized in the psychoanalytical treatment of financial executives and their families in the securities and banking industry. He's treated over 1,000 Wall Street executives, including CEOs and venture capitalists and hedge fund moguls. And he's arrived at some scary insights into the relationship of money, power, and influence and the sociopathic tendencies among corporate and financial elite. He'll be on as well. And then other guests next week, Dr. Marino Martinez, talking about biocognitive psychology, how our cultural beliefs affect the immune system and longevity, as well as Susan Levin. She'll discuss the threats of the dairy products that we eat and the need for alternatives. A lot of interesting topics coming at you. Let's say hello to our newsmaker who is standing by. He is the founder and CEO of the Venus Project Foundation in New York City, and he is dedicated to the promotion of clean energy technologies to reduce the carbon footprint and replace fossil fuel-based energy. The foundation has petitioned the White House with new energy technology strategy that would include cold fusion power generators, completely self-sustaining and available for homes. Until now, these new clean technologies have not been available to the public. They are seeking 100,000 signatures within the next week to meet the goal set by the White House. His name is Darim Maskanyan. Is that the proper pronunciation of your last name?
Yes, Maskanyan.
Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for doing this, Gary.
Explain to us the petition, what it's proposing, what are the advantages of these new technologies, and explain the new technologies. How could people use your technologies in homes or office buildings or in apartment buildings? And why aren't these technologies available already, and who's creating the barriers for their approval and availability?
As I'm sure you know, it is started with Nikola Tesla. When he was the first one who invented the electromagnetism. And ever since, due to the fact that there was a huge conflict between his desire for providing energy freely and wirelessly for everyone, and the fact that Morgan at the time, Chase, today's Chase, had a monopoly over copper wiring, they pretty much shut him down and stopped his research. At the time of his death in 1946, Nikola Tesla had 700 patents to his name. And just to give you an example as how far the technology has been kept from the American public, I'm sure you know in China and in Japan, magnetic levitation trains have been used for over 30 years. These trains glide, there is no friction, using magnetic levitation. That's another technology that is now being worked on, and the devices are available. But sadly, U.S. government is blocking any efforts for these manufacturers and these inventors to bring their devices out for public use, for home use, even though there was a 60-minute report 2009 that the big corporations, they're all retrofitting their gigantic office buildings with the refrigerator size generators that they're using fuel cell to capture energy from the fabric of a space all around them and power their facilities, which costs somewhere between $750,000 to $1 million a pop. That is available for big guys, but for the little guys, which consequently homes and cars are using about 75% the energy used on planet Earth, leading to and causing the all of these global catastrophes and global warming that we have. These technologies were, about a few months ago, I received a call from a person claiming to be a working at the Department of Energy. He suggested that aside from the fact that we are having this information and we trying to propagate this information, he suggested that maybe we should run a petition and take this directly to the White House, not only to make it a public information for everyone to see and also for everyone to realize that the politicians know about this. This is a White House website that they created this section on the White House website, We the People. And the requirement, as you mentioned, is we need to get 100,000 signatures for this petition to be viewed by the Obama administration. Part of which his administration, obviously, is the Department of Energy and the Environmental Protection Agency, to stop blocking these devices and allow people to retrofit their home with this device. They would never need electricity, to buy electricity from outside source. And for the first time, just a couple of days ago, Rockefeller Foundation, Rockefeller, the Standard Oil, and which later morphed to ExxonMobil, they came out and they admitted for the first time that, yes, the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has reached the highest level in human history. And they are, they said they are trying to fund and do a study of how to have the grids.
We've got a packed show. I wanted to give you a little newsmaker opportunity. So, explain what your petition is, but you've got to crystallize your idea for our audience real quick. We know you're trying to do to promote easy to use, inexpensive, all natural, home friendly technology. What does your petition say, and where is it?
The petition can be found on venusproject.org. If it's right on the home page, if anyone want to find it, please come to visit venusproject.org. You'll see the petition there, and just click on the link to the White House, and you can sign it there. As I mentioned, these two devices are one cold fusion, the other one is electromagnetic motor that they run very quietly. They require no energy, and the maintenance is every couple of years, very low maintenance. And once the grids are updated to smart grids in New York, everyone can have the benefit of having their excess electricity that they don't need go back on the grids and even make money on a monthly basis.
Okay. And where is the information so people can actually see all this?
VenusProject.org.
Okay. Good. We look forward to it. Thank you and good luck on this. Hope all this goes well. I'm Gary Knoll. Now let's go over to an issue of the day. The issue of the day is from the Huffington Post. It says Obama student loan policy reaping $51 billion. I'll quote this. The Obama administration is forecast to turn a record $51 billion profit this year from student loan borrowers, a sum greater than the earnings of the nation's most profitable companies, roughly equal to the combined net income of the four largest U.S. banks by assets. Figures made public by the Congressional Budget Office show that the nonpartisan agency increased its 2013 fiscal year profit forecast for the Department of Education by 43% to $50 billion. And ExxonMobil, the nation's most profitable company, reported $44 billion in net income last year. Apple, $41 billion. And all the others, less. So this makes the Department of Education has generated nearly $120 billion in profit off student borrowers over the last 5 years. So here's my question. You cannot negotiate with the government to discount your loan. Let's say you owe $200,000. You say, I'll give you $150,000. They'll say no. You can't have it forgiven. So on the one hand, the government is making a lot of money, more profit last year than any other corporation made on the planet. But think of all the students who are now saddled with massive debt and either no job or a job that they're not educated in or are underpaid or underworking. I would think that in a society that cared, we would address this. We would demand a forgiveness of all interest on all student loans and allow people to adjust those student loans so they could get out of them, declare bankruptcy on them, or at least in some way modify their cost. I don't believe the government, with a massive bureaucracy, corrupt as it is, a metastasizing cancer that wastes money, spends money, and is purely based upon crony capitalism, should be profiting off students. I find this obscene. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. Our talkback segment of our program, coming at you right now, 888-874-4888. But before we go to our guest, I want to go to a letter that I received. This is from Michael. It says, Gary, your interview with Guy McPherson was thought-provoking and disturbing. As a loyal and daily listener of all your Progressive Radio Network shows, I knew things were bad, but had no idea that it was to this extent. The interview provoked me to do a little more research, explore Guy McPherson's website and some of the videos available. Usually I'm looking for solutions when I go searching like this. So were the other people asking Guy questions in one of the videos? After one of his Dr. Doom answers, he replied as if to make light of the lack of solutions, quote, I don't have the desperation, but I'm a carrier, end quote. That should have been a disclaimer played before the video because it was accurate yet significantly understated. After being even more disturbed by what I found during my research, I'm afraid to verify some of the things he says because I don't want him to be right. I'm afraid to force myself into denial for the sake of caring about anything beyond my own little sphere. If I believe that Guy McPherson says by 2030, at least 13 out of 14 humans will be gone, and we'll be on our way to extinction and possibly a dead planet. The southern hemisphere will have most of the survivors. The complete collapse of the world's industrial economy overnight could stop this impending doom. His motivation to live well is to make sure at least cockroaches survive. And at the same time accept that I and the rest of the planet, for that matter, in the unlikely event that they wake up to this horrible news, have no control over changing the outcome. What else can I feel but hopeless? We can't reduce our footprint enough to make a positive difference. If this is true, I find it very difficult, near impossible, to care about the nuclear power plant up the road, the lack of preparedness for solar flares, the income inequality, buying American, decline of American manufacturing, fascism growing rapidly in our government and the world, GMOs in our food, economic collapse, bankers screwing us, corporate-owned politicians, and so many other issues that used to occupy my thoughts and motivations and actions on a daily basis. To an extent like this, it did before I explored Guy McPherson's world. As a nearly 40-year-old father of a 4-year-old girl, our 4-year-old, that according to Guy is unlikely to see 21 in spite of avoiding every toxin we possibly can, from fluoride to GMOs to mercury to sugar to vaccines, it becomes a little more difficult to care about aging and long-term health. My only motivation is to maintain and improve my health so that I can be an asset instead of a burden to my daughter in a world that might change so fast that I increase her odds of survival by a fraction of a percentage instead of decreasing them many fold. Apparently, Guy also believes that the world money and power elite know all this, and that's why they have no reason to act on climate change. Their only goals are to increase their and their family's odds of survival at any expense, and to do that, they need the shuffle and the industrial economies humming along. The more people that are aware of this inevitable apocalyptic means, more competition for survival. Accepting this information as a reality leaves me two options as far as I can see. I can come to terms with my own and my offspring's likely death in the next 20 years and adopt a sort of hedonistic eat, drink, and be merry lifestyle. Try to give myself as much bliss as possible until the end. Maybe play the lottery every day and hope that I'll win a billion and get whatever spaceship or whatever I want. The more likely option for an optimist, for lack of a better word right now, like myself, would be trying to figure out how to prepare and prepare to fail at extending her life in a world that might be very tough to live in. Where do we go? What do I teach her? I never felt like ignorance was the better option until I met Guy McPherson. Now I'm not so sure. Okay. And I'm sure that there are a couple other people after hearing a program like that would probably have similar feelings. My response will challenge some of these. The most dire climate change predictions threatening human life on Earth have been suggested by Professor Emeritus Guy McPherson, a professor of natural resources and environmental ecologist at the University of University of Arizona. According to his calculations, and these are his alone, but there are some supporting climate change scientists, humanity has until about 2030 before witnessing massive die-offs of human life from extreme conditions. And while this news will upset numerous people, as it did the person who wrote me the letter, even seducing them to a nihilistic and even hedonistic passivity in their lives, this impasse is important to understand because there are consequences to denial. The verdict is becoming increasingly unanimous among climate scientists that humans are a major contributor to global warming and extreme climate conditions mounting around the globe. There were more than 100,000 extreme weather events last year, over 11,000 of them in the United States alone. 50% of the United States, through 16 states, has encountered drought conditions and devastation in the form of wildfires as a result. Recently, 12 tornadoes reached up to 200 miles an hour yesterday, descending upon western Texas. California is witnessing forest fires 4 months earlier than expected. Daily new extremes in temperature and climatic conditions are being felt somewhere around the planet. Hurricane Sandy caused the loss of hundreds of thousands of homes and a property loss of over $75 billion. And that was only a Category 1 storm when it hit the northeastern seaboard. Imagine the cost and the loss of life from a Category 2, 3, 4, or 5. And it's inevitable. If humanity is in fact greatly responsible for the rise in harsher, more extreme climate, then our denial of this fact is further contributing to humanity's demise when a truly catastrophic tipping point is reached by 2030, according to Professor McPherson's estimates, or a couple decades later, according to many other scientists such as Clive Hamilton or Frank Finner or Andrew Glickson or James Hansen. What is denialism but neglecting to heed warnings that our actions are not sustainable and will have dire consequences in the future? The blowback from society's denial, in fact, the core of our civilization's denial, is met with a tipping point being reached. placing blame upon a cabal, political oligarchs and corporates, titans and Wall Street elites, while providing some psychological relief from guilt and shame, will not step on the brakes to reduce the speed of climate-related feedback loops driving the Earth to be uninhabitable, in most cases, for many people or other life forms. Even faced with warnings, we continue to allow the environment to be desecrated. We are the fattest nation in the world and don't stop to consider the carbon footprint of knowing that 9 billion animals are slaughtered each year in the United States just to keep our junk food chains operative and children nice and plump. People don't stop to consider that vanity is a cost to the environment when they have their next SUV. Today's America is the land of the emotional enslaved. Our denial of freedom, democratic principles, of history, of the economy, of health, of our own bodies, is collectively leading to tipping points, which triggering a cascade of other intangible and determinal effects to be predicted. How far do we permit the White House to ignore the Constitution, increasing domestic spying, and pass even more undemocratic bills, such as the National Defense Authorization Act, before we careen into a fascist state full force? How much more money does the Treasury need from the Federal Reserve to be printed before the American economy crashes to third world status and the dollar is no longer the reserve currency that keeps the country artificially competitive and all of the different bubbles in place? How many more economic failures are waiting before Detroit becomes the new normal for our cities? The ghettoization of America has been happening. Already we have encountered and passed many political, social, and economic tipping points. Our national worldview tipped in 2001 as the Bush regime militarized over 160 countries to establish our military footprint on their soil. We created wars that we didn't need to happen in Afghanistan and Iraq and now in Syria, Mali, and other countries. Our hundreds of tons of depleted uranium explosives have left these environments in the Middle East wastelands for centuries ahead. But did we care? Democracy tipped long before the Supreme Court's decision on Citizens United. Corporations and private interests have been buying politicians and elections for decades. Corporate hood, not personhood, has been a norm in Washington for several decades now. Obama is rapidly charging towards a tipping point for a nation run by corporate internationalists, not Americans, by appointing billionaire or real estate mogul Penny Pritzker to head the Department of Commerce, and Monsanto attorney and insider Michael Taylor to head our national food safety at the FDA, and all other appointees are the same. Long ago, conventional medical practice and pharmaceutical drugs became the nation's leading cause of death, yet there has not been any systematic review of our medical genocide by our legislators or the AMA or any of the major medical groups or public health officials, and there is no constructive effort being made to turn the tide of iatrogenic deaths. Obamacare doesn't prevent a single disease and funds nothing that will reduce America's declining quality of health. The only real beneficiaries of Obamacare are the private insurance, drug, and hospital industries. They wrote the bills. American education tipped 20 years ago. A curriculum to create a nation of young, educated, critical thinkers has been usurped by private interest, and we now have only a manifesto to educate children to earn higher scores instead of learning how to function in life. 58,000 factories closed and jobs were offshored and manufacturing plants greatly downsized. And if this was not sufficient for corporate executives to increase revenues and pay themselves higher bonuses, we now have visa laws enabling companies, these same companies, to import highly trained workers from other countries like India, Korea, and Taiwan to replace highly skilled, educated Americans who had developed some seniority, now washed away. 8 million families lost their homes, according to the latest government statistics. That means about in the vicinity of 35 million Americans homeless. And who cares? Where is the story of that? And we have another, at least 7 million American homes that are underwater or are late in their payments. 18 million hungry children in the United States are a part of 48 million Americans who are facing food scarcity. They just don't have enough food to eat. Many are relieving some of the hunger with food stamp purchases. American relationship to eating healthy foods tipped when the majority of California's population rejected what we needed, a labeling law to let us know if food was genetically engineered. And they said, no, we don't want such a law. Americans remain in cultural stupors as 100,000 gas hydrofracking wells and 104 decrepit, dangerous nuclear reactors threaten the health of themselves and their families. There is no massive popular outcry to put a halt to this corporate insanity and environmental challenge. To have a sustainable nation and planet, its residents must honor compassionate thoughts and actions and values. Looking at the past 50 decades and the nation's transition from a country identified with freedom of speech and democratic values and respect for the vote of the people in the last 50 years for all people to a militarized and intelligence police state that would make the Spanish Grand Inquisitor proud. America's foreign policy to bully, invade, threaten, and infiltrate with bad intentions should not be a surprise. The collapse of higher moral and spiritual values has already tipped in favor of violence, narcissism, and sociopathological behavior. Rather than the earlier generation's best and brightest joining the Peace Corps to relieve suffering in impoverished nations, now the best and brightest roar each summer upon graduation and gallop off to Wall Street to plunder not only the wealth of resources, but to profit at any means possible for themselves. But the average American doesn't mind because they're too enthralled with the sociopathic rantings of Hell's Kitchen megalomaniac host Gordon Ramsay, humiliating and degrading restaurant chefs and wannabes. For what? Learning how to make a better, healthier meal? Or learning how to use power against others? Guy McPherson is not the lone voice to speak out. There are thousands of conscientious scientists and scholars and humanists who have warned about specific pieces of the big view. When we gather all the warnings and paint a large mural of our future, we are still faced with a very dire and gloomy future that is fundamentally being ignored across the political and social strata by the vast majority of American public. Certainly, there's a great deal we can do. The most dire predictions are based upon our unwillingness to make dramatic changes in our consumption. Our efforts and contribution to our communities, our voting patterns, our methods of protest and demonstration, and how we invest our money. But first, we must take a good look at ourselves and our values. This must be the starting point. To those who want to give up, to give in to hedonism or nihilism, I challenge you to take this grim warning as a call to positive action, not only for our survival, but for the better quality of life that is possible. I also believe that it is not merely a breaking down, but an opportunity for breaking through. I do not look at 30 years from now and what might happen or may not happen. Rather, I look at what I can do today. Do I need what I'm purchasing? Am I purchasing what I really benefit from? Am I purchasing organic, buying local? Am I supporting the best that I can? Am I sharing with other human beings? Am I helping others in this world? Am I honoring my spiritual nature? Or am I selfishly absorbed only in my own thoughts, what helps me? Rushing off to a yoga class, a meditation class, going to get my wheatgrass, and claiming that if I sit at the feet of a guru, somehow that makes me a better person, more spiritual person, it enlivens me. It is nonsense. I can't tell you the hypocrisy of the so-called spiritual New Age movement that I detest. It is filled with mockery. You're a better person when you go out and help other people selflessly. And how often is that done? So for those of us who live by a different set of principles, we do not need a tornado that happened yesterday at 200 miles an hour to realize that's the wrong place to live, or near the ocean, or in a state that does not have a chance of getting out of its permanent drought. We will not vote for any of their politicians, nor buy their products, nor watch their television, nor consume their medical industrial remedies. No. We will make intelligent, reasoned, and healthy and sustainable choices. So each day, we reaffirm our right to live that day, and reaffirm that a cow will not die, a chicken will not die, a fish will not die, our planet will not be polluted because we are alive. We will make conscientious choices. Now, you can say and argue, but you're only one person. I will say, I am one person, but there are another 35 million one persons making similarly positive choices. Do you know the power of 30 million people working towards common goals? Then we can make sure that other things that would otherwise tip won't. And not every place will be uninhabitable. And not every place is equally vulnerable. And learning how to be self-sustaining is what we're doing now. When we teach people about hydroponics, aquaponics, sustainable lifestyles, best places to live, that's what we are doing. I would suggest that you get beyond your sense of looking at the world backwards and look forwards. But if all you see in 30 years or 15 years is what one man predicts, then you're not also seeing what 30 million of us predict. He is but one man, and he is fallible, and he could be accurate on many things, but it is not inevitable. So we're looking at what we can change, and not cursing our incompetence for what we cannot. Hope that addresses your concerns. I'm Gary Nall. Let us now go to our guest standing by for a short newsmaker update, Dr. Jay Cohen. He is a nationally esteemed medical practitioner and researcher. Dr. Cohen, we haven't been able to get. All right, we'll go to TalkBack, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and we will take your calls. Let's see who we have up now, and let's say hello to, who do we have here? John from Maryland. Hi, John. Your turn.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a problem with I have a blister in my left eye, and he said it's due to an enlarged blood vessel. And I've been taking shots for 5 months, and the last time he made my eye bleed, and now I see floaters flying around, so I stopped him from giving any more shots. Meanwhile, I called your office, and the nutritionist told me to take lutein, grapeseed extract, and fish oil.
Okay, well, what you should do is you should get into the hands of a holistic ophthalmologist. That would be my advice, because only a holistic ophthalmologist could tell you how to reduce the intercellular debris, the floaters, how to reduce oxidative stress, and how to turn off inflammation in the eye. Now, indeed, the omega-3 fatty acids are strongly anti-inflammatory, and that could be very beneficial. Okay? Hope you will. Do well on that, John. George from Connecticut. Hi, George. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. I'm wondering, how does one get into hydroponics? I'd love to really learn about it and also possibly see if it can get into a sustainable community in small urban, but areas that are adjacent to areas that are green enough where they can possibly do it, especially poor communities, and possibly transplanting this overseas to South America, Asia, wherever there's communities that need a more diversified way of living.
We are working as we speak right now. I am building various types of aquaponics, hydroponics, to show how it's done step by step. And I will have this complete within the next 4 weeks, and then you'll be able to see photograph one through however many there are, hundreds, with a description of that. And then I'll do a webinar where people can then see what is done, and then I can explain how you can do it in a small space. You could do it on your roof. You can do it in your backyard. Not difficult to do. And then you can share that with every group you want out in the Internet. But it's all being done right now as we speak. All right?
Is there any way I can assist? I mean, maybe help you out with the project or whatever.
I don't need any assistance right now. I would rather you assist other people by sharing the information, especially locally. Once you get all the information, how easy and inexpensive it is to do, and all the different things that can grow, all the microgreens and for pennies, and sprouts, and all the different vegetables, and then you can maybe get your local community to turn over a garden, an abandoned area in the city, and have that as a community garden, and then teach classes there, so then people can come and from all around learn, and then go back to their own areas and continue sharing that. All right?
Okay, thank you, Gary.
All the best, George. One last quick call from Harvey from Berkeley. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Gary. You've been talking about mass coronal ejections. Well, there have been four X-class mass coronal ejections off the sun in the last, I think, 72 hours. And the sun is revolving toward us. And the thing is that the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant here in California is grid-powered. And if we get a good coronal mass ejection, it could overpower the grid and knock out the transformers. And then the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant needs... It pumps 2.5 billion gallons a day of water through the system, and if it doesn't have the power to pump it through, then you get a nuclear meltdown. They're allowed to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission currently mandates that they only have to store about a week's worth of fuel on the plant, around the plant, to power the generators. But after that, it's gone. And if the grid is slow to return. Because these transformers, they're built on demand and it costs about $3 billion each. And so that means the highways and byways of California will be littered with cars because the fuel systems, the pipelines, the refineries, and the stations won't work.
Harvey, look at it a little differently. You're going to be looked at as Chicken Little. Wouldn't it be better that you focus upon sharing the insights that you and others agree upon and taking appropriate actions rather than trying to educate people who don't have any desire to want to know what you're talking about nor the willingness to change? That's the issue that you have to face. All right? And I am doing a program on the coronal mass ejections in the next 2 days.
Thank you, Gary.
Okay. All the best.
Bye-bye.
And let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, just to continue on with that, this just in, Indian Point to become the first nuclear power plant to operate with an expired license. In just a few months, the 40-year license of Indian Point expires. And environmental groups are planning to release their own safety report on Indian Point on Tuesday because the NRC staff members are going to hold a public meeting in Tarrytown next Tuesday about the 2012 safety assessment. So that is some big news here. And Governor Andrew Cuomo has actually called for the closure of Indian Point. That's what the Journal News is reporting. So this is a critical time talking about stuff that we can do when enough people open their mouths. And I know a lot of people in your audience who have been hammering Governor Cuomo to shut down this power plant. So what are your thoughts on this?
I believe that we should rewatch Knocking on the Devil's Door to become updated on why we need to close all nuclear power plants. Then I believe that we should start demonstrating again. I believe everyone should write the governor and explain why we should be closing Indian Point, decommissioning it. And I also believe that people in the audience should get a copy, and many of them have. Tens of thousands of people already have a copy of Knocking on the Devil's Door, and give every member of the state legislature in New York a copy of the film with a note, close down Indian Point. That's what I would suggest.
Very good.
It is only people contacting the governor and their legislators that this is going to be supported and pushed forward. All right?
So okay.
We're out of time for today. I want to thank everyone for listening in. And also, 9 o'clock, 5th Avenue and 90th Street in Central Park on Sunday morning. Look forward to seeing a lot of people there. Have a nice day, everyone. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about the plight of 106,000 Haitians whose visas are being held in limbo, and we're following up on issues confronting the Obama administration.
Great. Coming up right now, Utrice Lead.